We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got quite a curious show today. In this half hour, we will be interviewing Louise Borden, has written a book called The Journey That Saved Curious George, The True Wartime Escape of Margaret and H.A. Ray, the authors of Curious George. She's actually going to be speaking this afternoon in about an hour and a half at the Holocaust Memorial in Farmington on Orchard Lake Road. It's a members-only membership. I think for $50, you get two people can get in there, and then you're a year member for the Holocaust Memorial. And also at 3:30, she'll be repeating that. And since she's doing two, and they gave us the option of which one we wanted to come to, so Hannah and I will be at the second one, the 3:31. And if you happen to hear this and you're at the 3:31, come up and say hello, and I'll say hello back. We have a wonderful assortment of a cappella music. Maybe this will be the week I'll talk about why we do a cappella. We'll see if we have time. It's quite eclectic. I even found a klezmer a cappella song. This is, yes, people really know, but they're jonesing for the klezmer. The portion of the week is a double portion again, Achrei Mos Kiddushin, Leviticus 16 and following. We've got a terrific Hasidic story in about 55 minutes. Stay all the way through to the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. An unnamed Palestinian was arrested trying to enter Israel through a West Bank checkpoint with a truck carrying powerful explosives. Security guards found the bomb in the truck's air conditioner during a routine check of its roof. In other news, five kites. We're talking about kites. These are like little paper things with tails and strings, a whole bit. Five kites sent from Gaza to southern Israel carrying firebombs set fires to Israeli wheat fields. Not going high tech, but it did what they wanted it to do. For the first time, listen to this, the European Parliament voted to condemn Hamas for its acts of terrorism and its use of human shields during the recent March of Return riots, in which 30 Hamas terrorists were killed by IDF forces. The motion also criticized Israel for using live fire to control the riots. The IAF issued an official confirmation that Israel's Air Force was responsible for last week's bombing of the T-4 airbase in Syria, adding that the conflict between Israel and Iran had entered a new phase of direct confrontation. IDF forces destroyed a fifth tunnel in Gaza leading to Israel. The IDF plans to destroy the entire tunnel network by this summer. Thousands, this is one of those scratching head reports. Thousands of Army reservists were mistakenly ordered Independence Day morning, that was last Thursday, to report immediately to their units having received a Tzav Shmoneh, which is order number 8, text message ordering them to ordering an emergency draft. Order number 8 usually indicates a war. The order was later rescinded because there was no war, and an investigation is underway as how such a thing could happen. The Genesis Prize announced that it's canceling its prize ceremony in Israel in June after 2018 recipient Natalie Portman said she would not take part in light of recent events. The prize, called the Israeli Nobel, comes with a $1 million award to be used by the charity of the recipient's choice. She doesn't get the money. The charity gets the money. It's not clear as to what events Ms. Portman was referring. And finally, this happens every year on Israel Independence Day. 70 times they've done this so far. More than 8.84 million people live in Israel. 6.6 million, or roughly 74%, are Jewish. 1.8 million, or roughly 21% of the population, are Arabs. And the rest is everybody else. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have on the line, Louise Borden has written a book, which to me was eyebrow-raising, as probably, I guess, 90% of the youth of America know about Curious George. This book is called The Journey That Saved Curious George, The True Wartime Escape of Margaret and H.A. Ray, the authors of Curious George. How are you today, Louise?
I'm just great. We're a little warmer in Cincinnati than Detroit, I think.
Oh, yes. Indeed. Like someone said to me this last week, we've had a very mild winter this spring. Yes. So, okay.
Great.
So now, Curious George was the second book that I read when back in 4 years old, I remember getting a library card. That was a rite of passage in Newark. Everybody, when I was 4 years old, I went to the library with my mom, and you had to be able to print your name on a piece of paper so that they could validate that it was you. And the first book that I read was Harold and the Purple Crayon. The second book I read was The Adventures of Curious George. So this is something I've read every single Curious George book, and my kids have read every single Curious George book. And now my grandchildren are reading every single Curious George book. So what I'm curious about is, how did you get involved with the backstory behind it? Because up until I saw this book, it never occurred to me that the Rays were even Jewish.
Exactly. Well, I was typing away in Cincinnati on working on other children's books, specifically several about World War II, and I saw a blurb in Publishers Weekly, which is a trade magazine for people in publishing, and there was just three sentences that stated that Margaret and Hans had fled from Paris on bicycles in June of 1940 on a rainy morning, carrying among their manuscripts what would become Curious George. It did not state that they were German or that they were Jewish, but I was just fascinated as a fellow, you know, book creator that they had been in this great escape with millions of other people on the roads of France, because I had studied that time period in college. So I asked around in publishing if there was a book about this. I have a great interest in the war and in the ordinary stories that have come from the war, and no one knew any of the details. And to kind of summarize, I started on a journey of research. Neither of the Rays were living. They didn't have children. And they had sent all of their archival belongings. The estate had sent them down to a special library at the University of Southern Mississippi, which houses all of the paintings, drawings, manuscripts of 1,200 children's book creators, artists, and writers.
Okay, maybe you're answering my question, as it seems kind of obscure. The University of Southern Mississippi would have the collective archives of H.A. Ray, but you said that's just kind of like, is that like an old children's book manuscript graveyard? Kind of like the elephant graveyard?
It is. Well, it's really a very vibrant collection that's grown over the years. The original curator, whose name was De Grumman, began this collection, and she contacted AJ and was given a piece of art and stayed in touch so that at the Ray's death, the estate sent the manuscripts down. But Ezra Jack Keats, also Jewish, very famous. He wrote and illustrated The Snowy Day. Just Newbery winners. Many, many people have sent their archives down there, and they have a large children's literature conference every year, and acclaimed writers and authors go and speak there. So it's really kind of a national jewel down there.
A children's book historian's heaven. Okay, so take us through the process. So you've got this like earworm going on in your head saying, I gotta do this. So did you like pick yourself up and go down to what city in southern Mississippi someplace?
Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Yeah, it doesn't
which
get
means flying to Atlanta, changing planes, flying to Gulfport, renting a car, and driving 60 miles to Hattiesburg.
Uh-huh.
And on my own curiosity and money, my own time and money. This was in the late 90s, actually, because this book was a long project. After that, I would go to Paris a couple of times and rent cars in France and try and find some of the places that the Rays, where they had lived or stayed during the years 1936 to 1940, before the Germans came into to Paris. So it was a remarkable research journey for me, and somewhat of an adventure, but I was kind of a pathfinder. No one had written about this, and I had to piece together through the letters in the archives, through photographs, through editorial letters, what projects they were working on, when, and I made big tracking calendars in my house with, you know, each day, where were they? Were they in Avranches? Were they in Paris? Were they traveling? Were they, you know, at home working on their art projects? Who were they? They were Jewish. I didn't know that. Both families had grown up in Hamburg, and Hans served in the German army in World War I. Who knew, you know? And then he went to Brazil in the 1920s because of the inflation in Germany. And then Margaret, from a family that knew Hans, Margaret was younger, a little younger than Hans. She left Germany with others in her family because of the temper of the times in the mid-30s in Hamburg, and with the Nazi
rise to power,
with the Nazi laws, et cetera. So Margaret's parents went to London. Her father had served in the German parliament at one time. So these were people who were book people. They loved art. And so Margaret ends up in Brazil, where Hans is already living and working, and they get married, and then they go to Paris for a honeymoon, and instead of staying for 2 weeks, they end up staying for 4 years. Probably would have stayed had war not broken out.
I can say that's some honeymoon.
Paris. Excuse me?
That's some honeymoon.
Yes.
4 years. Yeah, yes. I've said that. My wife and I were married 35 years. It's like it's a long honeymoon for us.
Yes, yes. So, you know, they were lucky. They had Brazilian passports, and they were able to get the proper travel documents in those terribly hectic days of June when thousands of people were trying to cross the border and get out of France before the closing net of occupation came down.
So they bicycled from, let me interrupt you, they bicycled from Paris to Spain. You have like the Pyrenees Mountains in between. That's
yeah.
Pretty hefty.
Exactly. So when I learned that they had bicycled out of Paris and then taken a train to Lisbon.
Okay.
I thought, well, how long did they bicycle? You know, Hans was 42 years old. These people weren't Lance Armstrong. How were they going to do this? So, and I looked at a map and I wondered what roads they traveled. And in the archives, in an envelope, were Hans's tiny, the size of Post-its, work calendars, a diary calendar. And each day he noted what he did and where he worked. And so I realized if I could, and I blew these up on the Xerox machine to enlarge them, if I could find his own words, and they're in the calendar, June 12, 1940, left Paris by bicycle at 5 a.m. And they did not bicycle all the way to the Spanish border. They bicycled to Orléans, and then they took their bicycles and got on a train with their bicycles and went down to Bayonne and Biarritz, and then they sold their bicycles at the French-Spanish border, got on another train, and took it to Lisbon. So they traveled for about 2 weeks, and it took them, it was about 4 months from when they left Paris until they got to New York Harbor, coming in by the Statue of Liberty on October 14, 1940.
What kind of visa did they have to get into the country? Because they were both carrying Brazilian passports. Immigration
right.
laws were very tight.
I don't know the visas. I don't know that those documents no longer, well, they're not in the archive and no one has come up with them. But Hans cited in his calendar that they would spend hours at the various consulates in various towns, the Portuguese, the Spanish consulate, the American consulate. Margaret had a sister who was living right outside of New York City on Long Island. And so their hope was to go from Lisbon through Rio, where Hans's sister was living with her husband, and then up to New York.
Would they have problems since they were carrying? Let me interrupt you guys. Since they were carrying Brazilian passports, they wouldn't have needed any type of a document to go to Brazil. They should have been able to just get on a boat and go to Brazil.
No. But leaving France, I think there were certain. You know, you had to have your travel documents stamped. They had some identity cards that they held before the war that showed where they were. You know, it's like I guess they were required back then, where you, if you were going to leave Paris and go visit Avranches, you know, and it was stamped by the prefecture or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But travel was tough with all of these ships, you know, that were loaded with people trying to leave and trying to get, trying to get permission. As a matter of fact, they were in Rio and they were waiting to come to the United States, and they waited weeks, and they went to see they were at the consulate, and the consul said, oh, well, I would have granted these sooner, and Margaret said, well, why didn't you? And Hans kind of kicked her under the table with his foot. I was later told this story by the executor of the Ray estate. So mainly the book begins with their lives in Hamburg to explain to young readers and to their families who the Rays were. And then the second part of the book is their escape from Paris and coming in to New York. But it doesn't detail their lives later too much. That information appears in a retrospective that I wrote for Houghton Mifflin. That I think you are going to be sent a PDF of.
Yeah, I have a PDF of it, yes.
Yeah. So that talks about how they wrote the books that followed the original Curious George.
Okay, so at what point, they left Paris with the manuscript of something which was eventually going to become Curious George. At what point did they start actually writing Curious George, Louise Borden?
Well, earlier. They first wrote a book called Raffi and the Nine Monkeys that was published in French and in English in 1939. And it's a children's book about a giraffe and nine monkeys. And the baby monkey's name in that book, that published book, is Fifi. And so then they started to work on a book taking just that little one monkey, Fifi, and having a book with Fifi's adventures. And Fifi was a boy's name, that they were using, but it sounded, by the time they got to America, the editor here said, let's change Fifi. That sounds a bit feminine, and it's a little boy monkey. You know?
Uh-huh.
And they settled on the name George.
It's very generic name. Now,
yes, they were working on other books also. Lift the Flap books, a book called How You Get There, Anybody at Home. That's the title of the book, Anybody at Home. So they were just kind of beginning to create books for children when the war came, although they'd use their artistic and photographic skills in advertising, making posters for various companies and, things like that.
Okay, what comes to mind is, so they're born in Germany, they had Brazilian passports, they were in Paris. How did they come to write a book in English?
Yes, it's amazing. Hans spoke 5 or 6 languages. Now he's speaking Portuguese when he's in Brazil. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they wrote, Raffi and the Nine Monkeys was first written in French and English. There's a French version and an English version. And Fifi, they wrote in, I saw the drafts appear in The Journey That Saved Curious George, a page in English. Mm-hmm. But they weren't writing in German. They weren't living in Germany, and they were using the languages of the lands that they were living in.
Okay. Now, so if you're just joining us, our guest today is Louise Borden. She has written a book called The Journey That Saved Curious George, The True Wartime Escape of Margaret and H.A. Ray. And this is by Houghton Mifflin, and it's available wherever you buy a book, you'll really be able to find this one. So there have been some children's books over time, which have become collector, like annotated edition, scholarly works. I mean, like Alice in Wonderland has this whole thing where you could buy there's like various and sundry people have lectured on the ins and outs of what was behind that, and Winnie the Pooh, and then The Little Prince. And there's all these people that the allegories and the backstories. Are we going to be getting that with Curious George? Can we say that George is representative and analogous of something? Or is Curious George just a children's story, Louise?
I think, in my own opinion, I think that Curious George is a book character that they created. And they weren't expecting to write a second one. But because it was popular and children asked them to write one, this is now when they're in America, they stepped into a second book. And then they did another, and then another, and then those are Margaret's words from a recording I heard, a radio interview in 1966. It was when they came out with their final book, Curious George Goes to the Hospital. So, I know people have asked me and asked other, people, George doesn't have a tail in Raffi and the Nine Monkeys. The cover of that jacket, the monkeys are blue and the giraffe is, a giraffe color. And then later the monkeys are changed to a brown color, but they don't have tails. And I can't answer for Hans, but I think the estate, Leili Ong, the executor, said this is a book character that they created, that there's no, deep symbolic meaning in all of this. So
I'm sure if people could sit around and analyze Beatles lyrics, they could probably sit down and do something for Curious George.
I'm just interested in the Rays as people. Hans was kind of a Renaissance man. He was a deep thinker. He was so talented with his art. His art is so child-centered. Margaret had attended a more formal art. She had more formal art training, but she was a photographer and she was kind of the businesswoman of the pair. She would serve as Hans's art director. some people thought she had a bit of a feisty nature. And I think that they had this this optimism and energy, and they loved their work. And, you know, I was interested in them, as true artists, and I think they were. And the children's book field today, even, there's that sense. It's a small field. People meet each other in conferences. People love working in paint and with words that are going to go out into the lives of children and go into their backpacks when they leave school or they take a book out of the library. And editors and art directors, librarians and teachers, we kind of all swim in this sea of children's literature. And here is a book was written by a man born in 1898, and it's still, that jacket, you know, is recognizable around the world. Just incredible.
Oh, yeah. My wife, when I was coming, as I was walking out the door, she said, was it in Australia? We went into the department store and they had this whole Curious George exhibit. And I said, yeah, I think you were right. Now, let me just ask you. So the Rays, what was their name before it was shortened to Ray?
Reiersbach,
yes,
was Hans's name. And okay. Margaret was Waldstein.
Okay. So, so I can imagine he shortened it to sound more American or less German.
Well, he shortened it in Brazil because Reiersbach was difficult with the Portuguese in Rio and the language, and so he just shortened it to Ray. And Margaret's name has four different spellings over her early lifetime in school documents, and then she shortened Marguerite to Margaret, M-A-R-G-R-E-T, before they came to the U.S.
Okay.
But I was able, after the Journey That Saved Curious George was originally published in 2005, and after the book was published, I still had questions. I was still finding out information. A documentary aired last summer called Monkey Business, that's also going to be shown at the Holocaust Memorial Center. And this is, a nationwide documentary. And because of the documentary, relatives of the Rays who live in Australia and Brazil contacted the estate with childhood photos of Hans that had never been seen before.
Wow.
This was, 2 years ago. And his house in Hamburg that I'd never seen. It is destroyed during the war, but here is an archival photograph, So archival pieces are, as you know, so important.
Right.
I just wanted to share kind of a fun, it's not fun, but an interesting anecdote that your listeners might be interested in.
Sure.
Curious George was published in the U.S. in 1941, in August. And then a year later, in 1942, it was published by the Rays British publishers in London, Chatto and Windus. It was published as Zozo.
Uh-huh.
So it's got the classic jacket, and instead of saying Curious George, it says Zozo, because, King George was the king. They couldn't have the king's name and the book about a monkey, et cetera. And Zozo had been a character in their first book, Raffy and the Nine Monkeys. So on the flap of this book, it states, a few thousand young, lucky young people in this country were the happy possessors of Raffy and the Nine Monkeys. Many more would have been equally lucky if a large number of copies of the English edition had not been in Paris at the outbreak of war and prevented by Hitler from reaching England. However, fortunately, Mr. Ray himself escaped, and so whether or not you had a Raffy, you can now have this exciting story of Zozo, who is one of the nine. He is perhaps the most daring and mischievous of them all, and when you have read of his escapades, you will see that it would take more than Hitler to catch and keep him.
Wow.
So I just think that's a very moving echo of the Rays' lives. George is always getting into trouble and getting out of trouble, and how lucky we are that the Rays were able to get out of Europe, come to America. I mean, imagine our world without Curious George.
I have one more question, and we have to wrap it up. So the Rays fled Paris from the Nazis. Were they, in your opinion, would you say they fled because they were Jewish, communists, anti-Nazis, some other anti-philosophical? What was their reason for feeling a need to escape the Nazis? French people just not getting one involved with a war? There's lots of reasons why they could have escaped.
Right. Well, I think, in my opinion, I think they left. Number one, everyone was leaving Paris to get out of the way of the army. But they were German-born Jews. And I'm sure they felt that risk in their lives. Because had they stayed in France, the next fall, foreign Jews had to register at police stations. And so whether they had a Brazilian passport or a Dutch passport or, you know, they were foreign Jews. When I found the ship manifest of the ship that they took from Rio to New York City in October of 1940, they were listed on the ship manifest, thank you, Ancestry.com, as Hans Reiersbach, called H.A. Ray, and Hebrew was written above. You know, it was German and it crossed out and it said Hebrew because, of course, he didn't have German citizenship. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that that was part of it. I don't think it was that they were, communist or whatever you were saying in your list there of reasons. But most of their family left Europe before the Holocaust unfolded. But there was a relative of Hans's. I had thought it was a cousin, but I think I've learned more recently that I believe it was an aunt of Hans's, Paris de Theresienstadt.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, so you've come out with different editions. I'm looking at a paperback edition with a bright yellow color, which kind of looks like as soon as I saw it, I didn't even have to look at it. I said, oh, that's got to do with Curious George. It's the same color scheme as a Curious George book. And there's a hardcover, and there's also additional editions, Louise Borden?
Yes, there's a young reader's edition, and Alan Drummond, whose art is on exhibit at the Holocaust Memorial Center. It's his art that's kind of the show-stopping part of the exhibit there. Mm-hmm. He lives in England, and he and I collaborated with an editor we changed the format a bit for the young reader's edition. It's a smaller trim size. The broken lines that I write in my style have been kind of made more into paragraphs to elevate it for more, you know, fifth and sixth grade readers. So it doesn't look like a picture book. It looks more like, you know, the trim size of a novel. And then at the very end, there's a section, a conversation with Louise Borden and Become a Detective, where I show four clues giving photographs to children and showing them how detectives can look at pictures and get ideas and clues and find facts that way through using the photos.
Okay.
There's also a page of Hans's diary.
Okay, wonderful. So that's going to do it. Okay.
I wanted people to see what I had seen in the archives, and that's why those are included along with Alan's very wonderful illustrations and HAs. I think
it really does come through. It's a very special book. Okay, our guest has been Louise Borden, The Journey That Saved Curious George, the wartime escape of Margaret and H.A. Ray. Louise is going to be speaking in about an hour at the Holocaust Memorial about this topic. As a matter of fact, it's a members only, so if you want to go there, there is a membership dues, and that gets, I think each membership gets you two tickets in, and it's also being repeated at 3:30. You're doing exactly the same thing, 12:30 and 3:30, Louise?
Yes, the same talk to members.
Okay, and Hannah and I will be at the 3:31, God willing, and we'll see you there. So thank you very much in enlightening us. This has been wonderful.
Thank you. And the exhibit runs through July 5th, so people not member who are not members are not attending on Sunday or, you know, able to see the artwork and archival pieces through July 5th.
Okay, that's going to do it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Up next, for your listening pleasure, this is Ari Goldwag, no stranger to the Jewish Hour, came out recently with a song called Emes, which means truth. Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We're not doing it yet. Next up is Shlomi Kaufman. I think we once played something of his, maybe a year ago was the last time that he had something. But he's also, people are getting on the bandwagon with the a cappella stuff between Passover and Shavuos. So this is a remix of, I think, maybe Avram Fried, maybe Shlomi Dax. I don't remember who did it originally. It's called Lili. Shlomi Kaufman. Up next, as I promised in the intro to the show, I actually found a klezmer a cappella piece. This is the Malchus Choir. It's quite, they've got some amazing voices in this group of young men. And it's appropriate for now. The piece is called Kabbalah Satorah, which means receiving the Torah. And it's about, it's related in the Medrash, that the Almighty went around to all the nations of the world asking them if they wanted the Torah. And each nation asked, well, what does it say in the Torah? And the Almighty just happened to tell each nation something that they just couldn't live with. And they all said no. And then finally the Almighty came to the Jewish people. So in this version, so instead of going to say like the Ishmaelites and the Edomites and the Amalekites and all those, so they goes to Germany and France and Britain, the United States. So it's an updated version of it. Let's give a listen.
Und was Schäfer will mir da reden und erzähl von jenen Freuden.
Freit sich alle Tanz und Quell von der Teure auf der Welt.
Der was Schäfer von der Welt, der größte Beure, sucht ein Kossen für seine Tochter, die heilige Teure.
Freit sich alle Tanz und Quell. Alle Völker von der Welt.
Der Baschäfer frei bei die Völker alle. Wer will die Teure Farakale? Die Völker fragen, was im Wen. Ei, me will nicht hören, me will nicht sehen. Unverwurst, unverwurst.
dieser Malach mit die Teure von Himmel erraubt, genommen fliehen kein Jurab. Und kein Russland gekommen ist er und gefragt zu Abeil ist wer. Sagt man zu einem Harascha, sagt uns was Bajalasta. Sagt sie der Malach dem ersten Gebot. Und euch, ich bin euer Gott. Sagen sie, nein, Altos allein, wir weiß nicht, Haber, wohin zu gehen. Wir haben gelernt, bei die Tates allein, als du wie bei uns ist Schein.
Nein, nein, Altos allein, wir haben eine Wiede, Nefschelbe, in Deutschland gehen, Nefschelbe, wenn euch verstehen.
Ist der Maler geflogen gleich dahin und ist gekommen kein Berlin. Und die Deutschen, die Teure weißt er und gefragt zu Abeil ist wer. Sagen sie mir seinen Gerät, sagen sie die Wahrheit, was da steht. Sagt sie der Maler, läuft ihre Tag. Deuten ist nicht geschehene Sache. Sagen sie, nein, Autos allein, wir weiß nicht, mein Herr, wohin zu gehen. Wir haben gelernt, beim Vater allein, als deuten darf man was mein. Ist der Malach geflogen und weiter bis.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herr Schulteman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. The portion of the week is Acharei Mos Kedoshim. It is a double portion. The first part of the portion deals with what the Kohen Gadol had to do when he went into the high priest, what he had to do when into the Holy of Holies, the most sacred area of the temple, and then complete the whole Yom Kippur ceremony, the Day of Atonement, and then concludes with forbidden illicit relations. And the second part of the portion, which is Kedoshim, contains 51 various commandments, the theme of which is, be holy because I, your God, am holy. So it's one portion now. So if it's one portion with one name, that would indicate that the first commandment and the last commandment have to have some sort of a connection, even though there are some, I don't know, 70 or so commandments in between, but this is the beginning. This is the end. It says the end is planted in the beginning, and the beginning is implanted in the end. So the first commandment involves the high priest going into the Holy of Holies. The last commandment is that we should not emulate the nations of the world and try to assimilate into them. And we see there is exactly, indeed, a direct connection, because when we talk about a Holy of Holies, where is now the Holy of Holies? Is deep inside every single one of us. It's that sanctified part of us, our very essence of our Judaism as to who we are. And we're told, yes, you can enter there under a very specific prescription. And it has to be that a person taps into their Judaism in a very specific way. And leading up to that, what say you might say is implanted in that is don't try to run away from it. It's always going to be there. And we're talking running away from a Holocaust. We know that the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, they knew who was Jewish. People, even as they tried to run away from it, declare themselves as proud Germans, and I served in World War I, and my father was a member of the German parliament, they had to flee. Why? because of their Judaism, because of their Jewishness, because of the Holy of Holies that was inside of them and is inside each and every one of us. But we don't need to run away from that. We need to run towards that. We need to bring that out more so that when, I've often said this, when a Jew stands up and says, I've got my Holy of Holies and you can't touch it because it is untouchable and is wears it proudly, you might say, then the nations of the world just say, yes, sir. We have to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. We've got an exciting Hasidic story. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Hey, Shulfin, and here you are listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Oh, piece of cake. Just go to rabbifinman.com. Right there on the homepage is the contact us link. You'll be able to send me any question, comment, criticism, critique, incredulity, or any other C or other letter word that comes to mind. And do that today, because otherwise you're going to forget. And I like to tell people, I do most of my Jewish Hour answering on Sunday afternoon, because that's when I'm in front of the computer. Today's going to be a little bit tight because, as we mentioned before, I will be 3:30 today at the Holocaust Memorial attending their members-only lecture featuring The Journey That Saved Curious George, The True Wartime Escape of Margaret and H.A. Ray. They have another one in about the first one's about a half an hour, and then the second one's at 3:30. I can't get to the first one, so I'm going to the second one with wife Hannah. Come say hello. You'll also find on the website the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, ways in which yours truly convey insights into the Torah. There's archived editions of the radio show there, last 2 years. There's archived editions of a wonderful class that I did at Jewish Ferndale, a whole entire book from 2009 to 2017. It took us once a week. We did it, and it's all up there on the website. Wonderful introduction to Jewish mysticism. You'll also find the donations page. We're in April. You guys, you did great for February, March. Got me all paid up to paid up February, March in March. At the beginning of April, we were able to pay for February and March. Now it's April, and now we're doing the same spiel. And it's been very slow. Understood because of how much those people who contribute regularly all contributed regular before Passover, which is a very good thing. But the show must go on. And we need you. Go to rabbifinman.com. Go to the donations page. Click on a number of your choice to donate right in your own number. Make it a monthly by doing it through PayPal with a credit card. And you don't even have to think about it. And you get the credit and we get the dough. Simple as that. And I guarantee the Almighty will shower blessings down upon you. Yep. Works every time. Then, if you don't like doing it that way, well, you can drop a donation of any amount into an envelope. Place a stamp in the upper right-hand corner, affix in the middle of the envelope the following words: The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Do it today, because if you're going to wait till tomorrow, you'll forget. That's the way just life is. Okay, the Hasidic story involves a certain mayor of Premish Lom who died in 1850. A very holy Jew came to him, whose name was not included in the story, said, I want to move to Israel. And he said, the mayor said to him, that's an expensive proposition. How are you going to get the funds? So he said, you know, it's going to cost me about 400 rubles, and I have a relative. I can get a couple rubles from here, and I get her a couple from there. And mayor just said, that's such a waste of time. Have a seat over here. Go smoke your pipe. Everybody was into the pipe smoking back then. And we'll see what happens. The next person to come in for an audience with Mayor Premish Lom was a very wealthy magnate. And he came and he had some kind of question about whatever he had a question about. And Meir said to him, let me tell you a story. There was a certain Reb Moshe who many years ago became fabulously wealthy, but the more money that he had, the less generous he became. Such that if someone would come to his door, even asking for food, there were people, this is he's talking central Poland, there were people who were starving to death. And they would knock on his door, and he would say, go across the street. He takes care of people like this. I don't want you in my house. So this caused a whole clamor up in heaven, and it was decided that, this guy doesn't deserve the money that he's got. We're going to take it away from him. Elijah the prophet said, wait a second. Let me go down. Let me check this out. This is not right. We have to go check it out. So Elijah came down as a man and in tatters and knocked on the door and said, please, I'm about to fall over dead. I really need something to eat. And he got the door slammed in his face. So Elijah went back and reported, yeah, it's true, the guy doesn't give away a penny. And so it was about to be decreed that the person should lose all of his money. But then he said, one person stood up and said, how could you possibly execute such a decree when he never had any warning? So the Rebbe Plummer Shalom looked at him and said, I'm giving you a warning. This man here needs 400 rubles to get to Israel. I suggest you give it to him. The man immediately pulled out his wallet, took him the 400 rubles, and started to cry. What can you say? He said, you have to be more charitable. Do good things with your money. That's going to do it for us. We hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We'll see you back again next week. Take care.